Paradox and irony, essence of life itself. People have remarked that I seem to be dividing the sermon into several sections. And that's, as I tell them, it's because I have a lot to say. And the response has been, I hadn't noticed. But be that as it may, the first part of the sermon today is dedicated to an exploration of irony and paradox. And we use these terms all the time, probably incorrectly. Just because something is a coincidence doesn't necessarily mean it's a paradox or an irony. So minimally, after you leave this morning, you should have considerable confusion about what these terms really do mean. I will say that in 1991, Justin Gardner wrote a book called Sophie's World. It was subtitled A Novel About the History of Philosophy, which implies you won't be seeing it on Netflix anytime soon. But he was a teacher with a great idea. He wrote this book so that philosophy would be accessible and interesting, and it became an international bestseller. Here's a section from the beginning of the book. We are witnessing a magic trick. We cannot understand how it's done, so we ask, can the magician change a couple of white silk scarves into a live rabbit? Apparently so, but how? In the case of the rabbit, we know the magician has tricked us. What we would like to know is just how he did it. But when it comes to the world, it's somewhat different. We know that the world is not at all sleight of hand, because we are here in it and part of it. Actually, we are the white rabbit being pulled out of the hat. The only difference between us and the rabbit is that the rabbit doesn't realize it's taking part in a magic trick, unlike us. We feel we are part of something mysterious, and we would like to know how it all works. I like the metaphor. We are the white rabbit being pulled into existence. It does seem magical, mysterious, this hat trick. But just what is the nature of the reality into which we've been pulled? Are people cheering our arrival, or is it an old trick, and are we appearing to an indifferent crowd? I think the analogy is worth pondering. The comparison between ourselves and this white rabbit. Here we are, now, what do we do? Some years ago, I chose the Unitarian Universalist ministry to help me speak to that question of purpose. I saw our religious tradition and the practice of ministry within that tradition as an ongoing attempt to discern not really why we're here. That is a very perplexing question. It's a good question for Philosophy 101 and a great question for conversations, but I'm not sure that it yields an evident answer, sometimes just frustrating. However, this is a question I do like to have us look at. Since we are here, yanked and pulled into life, what do we do now? One of the many great things about being a minister is that people care about what we think, and I have felt a responsibility to think as deeply and clearly as I've been able about many issues, topics, and truths. One truth, one observation that has emerged to me over a number of years is that life frequently presents itself to us through irony and paradox. Irony is the discrepancy between something that's said and what is meant, what is said and what is done, what is expected or intended, and what happens. Paradox is a statement whose two parts seem contradictory and yet, in examination, seem to reveal a truth. Jesus speaks oftentimes through paradox. They have ears, but do not hear. And another one that you might have heard also, deep down, he's really very shallow. We use irony and paradox in literature, in speech, in humor, to tell a truth. And we capture people's interest, attention, and imagination because these are contrary and surprising ways of thinking. So, Oscar Wilde is the genius of paradox. Those who try to lead the people can only do so by following the mob. I know it's a paradox because it's contradictory, but on the other hand, when you think about our democracy today, how likely are we to elect a leader who is that far in front of us as a true visionary? Most of the time, we elect people who try to say what they discern that we are saying and thinking. So in some sense, it is a popularity contest, and the person who wins tries to connect the best with the audience, the electorate. The idea that you have people elected who are truly leaders from the front may be harder. Wilde again, man is least himself when he talks in his own person. Give him a mask, and he will tell you the truth. Which is why sometimes literature and theater are revelatory experiences for us, because here we find the ability to have someone who's willing to tell the truth through the mask of the actor. Examples of irony. One identical twin says to the other, "You're ugly." Many things can be preserved in alcohol. Dignity is not one of them. There are coincidental ironies. For example, a class on prophecy at a church is postponed due to unforeseen circumstances. A restaurant called the Hard Times Cafe closes down due to the recession. The dictionary entry for the word short is really, really long. Stand By Your Man was one of the biggest hit songs sung by the country western singer Tammy Wynette, who is married 6 times in her real life. Situational irony, posting a video about how boring and useless Facebook is on Facebook. My friend said she can't go to church because she has a theology test to study for. The firehouse burns down, the police station is robbed. Someone is going on about how they wouldn't hurt an animal until we notice they're wearing a leather belt and eating a burger. In literature, Romeo returns to Verona and finds Juliet drugged in a death-like sleep. He assumes she is dead and kills himself. When Juliet wakes up and finds him dead, she kills herself with his knife. Now, I don't know if this has ever happened to you, Lenny, in the theater, but I have to tell you, as I've gotten older, the impulse to cry out in the theater is becoming stronger. So, for example, in a production of Romeo and Juliet, you would want to call out to Romeo, "It's okay. She's just drugged temporarily. Call the paramedics. Do not do anything extreme." Then finally, maybe we get a happy ending in this crazy play. Okay, so to review, irony can be situational. In the fight against an obscene film, a church group promotes the idea that the film ought to be banned, thereby creating enough publicity so that people who have never gone to see it in the beginning flock to the theater. But oftentimes irony is distressing or almost painful. It's not clear that the creators, the builders, the owners of the Titanic actually said it was unsinkable. But that language was there. And what it led to was the crew, the captain, the owner, taking chances with the vessel that would not have been taken if it had been a sinkable ship. In 1981, while standing next to his car, Ronald Reagan is hit in the chest by a bullet fired by John Hinckley Jr. In fact, Hinckley's bullet completely missed Reagan, but then ricocheted off the car's bulletproof window and strikes the president in the chest. Ironic, because the technology intended to protect the president contributes to his injuries. Irony is predicated upon a mismatch in our speech, our goals. So even if I say that irony asserts itself frequently into our lives, I'm not declaring that situation desirable, only common and frequent. Instead, I would say that a key goal, purpose, and even principle of life ought to be to minimize as many moments of irony as we possibly can. Obviously not theatrical or literary irony, but the irony in our lives. For example, the irony of matching freedom with access to guns and implying that our guns in America make us safe. They're making us more and more unsafe all the time. The irony of living in a wealthy society with significant poverty and income inequality, with the income inequality growing. It's irony's disharmonies that call out for attention. And often our struggle for justice is predicated upon restoring fairness and harmony to the world, the struggle for some sense of balance. And so we say that sexual orientation is not a lifestyle choice. And once we're able to make that assertion accurately and understand the biology of sexual orientation, then it seems absolutely a crime to deny our gay and lesbian citizens civil rights that should be available to every person. Skin color and ethnicity should not determine a person's destiny, but of course they have. Human rights should not be dependent upon where we happen to live. Our job is to reduce the frequency of irony in the world. I've shared this poem by Gary Snyder before. With it, I end this first part of the service. It's titled, Hay for the Horses. He had driven half the night from far down San Joaquin through Mariposa, up the dangerous mountain roads, and pulled in at 8 a.m. with his big truckload of hay behind the barn. With winch and ropes and hooks, we stacked the bales up clean to splintery redwood rafters. High in the dark flecks of alfalfa, whirling through shingle cracks of light, itch of hay dust in the sweaty shirt and shoes. At lunchtime, under black oak, out in the hot corral, the old mare nosing lunch pails, grasshoppers crackling in the weeds, I'm 68, he said. I first bucked hay when I was 17. I thought that day I started, I sure would hate to do this all my life. And damn it, that's just what I've gone and done. Well, on the cover of your order of service is from our good friends at Wikipedia. And I have had to promise Deb Abrams, who bid on and won next week's sermon, that I would not use any material from Wikipedia next week. But that has nothing to do with this week. So the buttered cat paradox is based on these two realities that somehow have to be contained in the same moment. The fact that cats tend to land on their feet and that the buttered side of a piece of toast will tend to land on the buttered side 81% of the time when dropped from the standard table. Standard height, I mean. And you know why, because the butter, it's just the way, so the toast is this way, right, and it tends to fall and it's rotating, and the buttered side is a little bit heavier, so 81% of the time it tends to land on the buttered side down. So if you strap, as we did in this experiment, a piece of buttered toast, butter side up, to the back of a cat, and you drop the cat, what happens? Various theories have applied that the cat rotates in space in this kind of unsteady equilibrium between the competition between the buttered side of the toast and the cat landing on his feet. Did you know that the cat does have what's called a cat righting reflex? If you drop most cats from a sufficient height, which is 12 inches or more, the cat does tend to land on its feet. This idea appeared on the British panel game show QI, which Vicki and I watch whenever we're in the UK. As well as talking about the idea, they also brought up other questions such as, would it still work if you used margarine? And more significantly, would it still work if you used the product titled, I Can't Believe It's Not Butter? Well, it's all humorous, of course, but paradox, which is found usually in puzzles and aphorisms, I want to suggest is an essential part of the fabric of life. And paradox, unlike irony, cannot be struggled against because paradox is part of creation. The more I know, the more sure I am that I know so little, the eternal paradox. Paradox is much deeper and universal a concept than the ancients would have dreamed. The assumption that anything true is knowable is the grandfather and grandmother of all paradox. The 19th century Russian novelist Ivan Turgenev writes in an early novel a series of questions that I think brilliantly pose a very powerful notion of paradox. The title is On the Eve, and the heroine is Elena. Why must we die? Why must we suffer separation's illness and tears? And if we must, then why all this beauty? Why this sweet feeling of hope? Why this reassuring sense of some immortal guardianship? What then is the meaning of that smiling, beneficent sky? Of this earth so happy at its ease? Can all this be only what we feel within? Whereas outside in reality, there is only an eternal icy stillness. Can it be that we are quite alone? Then why this thirst for prayer? And why does prayer give us joy? Turgenev wrote that novel in 1860, but I find those questions to be incredibly painful, precise, and paradoxical. One of Turgenev's most well-known quotations is, "We sit in the mud and reach for the stars," which is the perfect statement of paradox. Because isn't it true, wouldn't you say, that whatever else is true for us, we are beings of blood and tissue, what we traditionally described as being from the earth itself, and yet we aim at the stars. Two essential truths meet uncomfortably in the same sentence, seemingly contradictory, and yet both are true. The place this shows up very keenly is in something that seems very prosaic at first glance, and that is procrastination. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand if you have never procrastinated, because it would only prove you to be making a false statement. We all procrastinate, and some seriously. Why did it become the subject of a series of philosophical essays collected in the book The Thief of Time, which I read earlier this year? Because By its very nature, procrastination is intensely paradoxical. Philosophers are interested in it because it is an example of what the Greeks called akrasia, A-K-R-A-S-I-A, doing something against one's own better judgment and against one's own interests. Procrastination is willingly deferring something even though you expect the delay to make you worse off. The essence of procrastination lies in not doing what you think you should be doing, a mental contortion that accounts for the great psychic toll the habit takes on people. The perplexing thing about procrastination seems to involve going against all those characteristics that we say make us human. Indulging in generally an activity that doesn't make us happy. In one study, 65% of students surveyed before they started working on a term paper said they would like to avoid procrastinating. They knew both that they wouldn't do the work on time and that the delay would make them unhappy. Here's an irony. Over the years, 23 now, I have put my services in this notebook, Unitarian Universalist Demographics. And over the years, it's gotten a little beat up. I could have found a more attractive, more utilitarian binder a long time ago. The irony is that I am presumably a person who promotes reason and yet uses this to contain my services only because of superstition. Here's the paradox. A person of reason resorts to superstition because even in reason finds meaning in being superstitious. But paradox and procrastination seem to take up residence together in a quite amazing way. And this is why I say that paradox, unlike irony, is built into the fabric of our being, because we are self-contradictory in so many ways. Not intentionally, not purposefully, it just seems to be the way we are and the way life is. So I'll share with you what I find to be one of the most poignant paradoxes of all. One of the deepest and strangest of all human moods is the mood which will suddenly strike us, perhaps looking up at the stars at night, perhaps in a moment of love, perhaps in a meadow on a mountain, perhaps in the quiet of our home. And it's the feeling that there is a truth that we are just missing. It's as if the world is trying to speak to us and we don't get it. It's as if our own life is trying to say something to us, or spring, or life in fall, and death in fall. It's as if everything is announcing its truth to us and we reach for it and we don't get it. And I would say to you today, that is our best achievement as human beings. Our inability to grasp that truth. Because as long as it eludes us, we have meaning and purpose in our lives. It's like looking for a treasure and never quite finding it, never being able to locate the final key or the final combination that opens the chest or leads us to the place the treasure is buried. Once you're there, the story ends. If you were to grasp, or I were to grasp, life's final and ultimate truth, tomorrow would have no meaning. And the meaning of life is tomorrow, however old we are, whatever our condition of being. The ultimate paradox is this ultimate blessing, never presented or understood as such. I'm doubtful that you would be likely to read the poetry of George Herbert. He died in 1633 of tuberculosis. He was, by all accounts, not only one of Britain's great metaphysical poets, but a very dedicated Anglican priest. He visited his parishioners. He was a good person. I love this poem. And it seems to me, well, for me, it summarizes better than anything I've ever found my understanding of the nature of God. Bittersweet. Ah, my dear angry Lord, since thou dost love, yet strike, cast down, yet help afford, sure I will do the like. I will complain, yet praise. I will bewail and approve. And all my sour, sweet days, I will lament and love.